Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey everyone, it's Matt Finch here. We're flipping the switch for episode 50 of the Nui Tech People podcast. Today, our guest is James McDonald, the man himself who's hosted the last 49 episodes and really interested in looking forward to what he has to say today. Welcome everyone to episode 50 of the Nui Tech People podcast. We're a bit different today, so if you might remember me back from episode number one, James and I sort of kicked the thing off and we made a pact back then that if he actually made it this far and got into 50 episodes, I'd come back and interview him. So our special guest today is James McDonald. James, good to have you.
Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Bit different, sitting on the other side.
It is. Making it 50 episodes is very solid, a couple of years in, right? 2 years ago.
2 years, just about 2 years ago, yeah.
We were in the Lift and Go offices, or what is now the Lift and Go offices. Okay. Now we're over at Inks on Paris Street. So
that's it, moving up. Okay, so I mean, I guess for those that don't know you, or if this is the first time they've listened to your podcast, tell us a bit about yourself. Who are you? Where have you been? What's your journey? Yeah, let us know.
So obviously, James McDonald. I'm a recruiter, tech recruiter in Newcastle, co-owner of Nui Tech People brand. Started a podcast 2 years ago. Background before recruitment was marketing. That was my sort of life prior to recruitment, and then sort of fell into recruitment. We might go into that if you want a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll touch on that for sure.
So yeah, kicked off this podcast 2 years ago, and the whole objective really just to try to shine some light on what's going on in the Newcastle scene, highlight a few of the personalities or both, yeah, the personalities and also the projects that are going on in Newcastle. So it's been going for 2 years now, which definitely wouldn't have happened without all the people behind the scenes. If this was me editing and me putting it out, we wouldn't have made it past episode 5, I don't think. So thanks to Janae Little, who is the person behind the scenes, who edits everything, films everything, and records it. So shout out, Janae.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, so tell us about the transition from marketing to recruitment. Like, why did that occur? Why did you decide to go that way?
Yeah, I don't think anyone sets out to be in recruitment, right?
That's right. Yeah, bit of a dirty word, huh?
It is a dirty word. We can touch on that.
Yeah, we will. Well. We'll go into that.
So yeah, my life was my whole life was marketing. I did a Bachelor of Business at Newcastle Uni. I majored in marketing, went to Sydney, lived down there for 6 or 7 years. Online marketing manager. An events company, and then through the GFC, we're right in another pandemic now. That company went under. Joined Robert Half, which was a recruitment company. Wasn't doing any recruiting there, but I was online marketing manager, so played in the SEO, PPC. Email marketing was hot back then. I was doing a bit of that, learning myself some HTML.
Okay.
Thought I knew how to code at that stage. And then my wife and I fell pregnant and moved back to the Central Coast to be close to family. And I was commuting to the city for a little bit. On the side, I'd built a few websites. So were WordPress sites.
Oh, it's still around?
One of them still around, only because I haven't shut it down. So a couple of training websites, and we sold some online training programs, and I sort of customized the back end of it, set up some drip fed content, that type of thing. And during that time, I was spending a bit of money with Facebook. So we were making a reasonable amount of money. I spent quite a bit of money there with Facebook, got to know the head of small business at Facebook in Australia. And just funnily enough, he was doing some consulting with Foresights Recruitment, and they wanted to launch a tech brand. And he was doing some consulting there. He knew of some guy that just moved back to the coast, didn't want to be commuting to Sydney anymore. And that's how I fell into recruitment. They're like, hey, do you want to have a crack at this recruitment thing? You seem to know a bit about technology. Yep. And that's where it started.
Rest is history, huh? Okay. And then you went out on your own in 2017 off the back of that?
Yeah, mate. I had some really good times there, sort of learned my trade, if that's how you put it.
Yeah.
Enjoyed my time there. And then as my family was growing, three kids now, I was coming up to baby number three. I got presented an opportunity to sort of go out on my own, start my own thing. Yeah. It was probably always probably always, I guess, a goal of mine at some point to sort of have ownership of something. And it was right, well, maybe not right time, right place. Like it was, I literally left and went out on my own 2 weeks before my third baby was due.
Wow. Jeez.
And
must be scary.
It was scary. It was scary. I don't mind taking a risk. My wife would probably think otherwise. there was a bit of a net there. So it was a model where I was provided a salary as well when I went on my own. So it wasn't completely, I had ownership of the business, but there was a safety net there from a salary, which was the only reason I think I was allowed to do that.
Yeah, yeah, right. And you've been involved in the startup scene. So I guess it's a bit like starting your own startup really and building that up.
Yeah, I love the startup scene. So when I came to Newcastle, Newcastle recruitment scene, I was new to the party. I thought I knew what I was talking about. I quickly realized I didn't. I remember walking into, there's two meetings in particular that stand out. One was a software company on the Central Coast. I walked in and I said, oh yeah, I know a little bit of software development. I know a little bit of how to code.
HTML?
I think I said how to code. He's like, oh, front end or back end? I was like, what? What do you mean? I'd done some basic HTML, right? I learned some HTML when I had to customize some emails, and like email marketing, and then a little bit from a WordPress perspective. I thought, oh, I know what I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was quickly put in my place there. And then one meeting at the TAFE up here in Newcastle, I went in there, I was taking my first ever job brief for a .NET developer. And I was going through it. I seen this C# sign. I was like, oh, C#, oh. I think I know what I'm learning the lingo. Quickly found out C# wasn't a thing.
Wow.
And once I found out what C# was, I thought, I know what I'm talking about now. Yeah. So, mate, 6 years ago now, so.
Yeah, wow. And why technology? I guess you ask everyone, why technology? Why were you attracted to that specifically?
Yeah, mate, so marketing was my background, I guess, and marketing all went digital. So I had an interest in obviously websites and what was going on online from a dollars perspective. Making money was going to be online at some point in the future. And then I had a bit of an interest on, how that's going to evolve. What am I going to do? I didn't want to sort of be a dinosaur in my life going forward. I figured I'd have to sort of move with the times. And I sort of got lucky, fell into, the right place at the right time with Foresights. So yeah, man, it was a little bit of right place, right time, a little bit of, hey, I put myself in a position by building those sites, by learning that on my own to be the right place, right time. So, a little bit of luck, a little bit of make your own luck.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So, but mate, since then, the more I get into it, the more I learn, I enjoy it.
Yeah, good stuff. And so recruiters, let's talk about recruiters. Sometimes they're a dirty word. I know particularly when you've got a recruiter showing up at a meetup or a conference and, it always gets a few groans and a few eye rolls. And so, I guess, what are your thoughts on that? But also, what have you done personally to sort of, push against that image or, I guess, grow and educate people around recruiters?
Yeah, so I completely own that. I think maybe for the first, I would at least be 6 months, maybe a year, I was in recruitment. And if I went somewhere and met somebody new, what do you do? I'm a marketer. If my wife and I went somewhere for at a party, I do marketing. Yeah, I wouldn't tell people I did recruitment. Definitely had that sort of that used car salesman type.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it is, right? And that thought is there. And it's there for a reason, because it's a pretty shitty industry sometimes with some of the practices that people do. And there's no point running away from that. But the longer I've been in it, the more I figured out, hey, you don't have to act that way. You don't have to be that used car salesman. You don't have to be sort of leeching off the industry. That's the way I look at it. A lot of recruiters out there are, cold calling people, floating resumes without, having met somebody, are hitting people up for completely irrelevant jobs, not done any homework. It's just sort of, there is a low barrier to entry to get into recruitment. So you can see why it happens, right? And people in a lot of the bigger organizations, recruitment organizations, are KPI'd on how many calls you make, how many, those KPIs around that, which just sets up bad behavior, I think. So when I first come into the Newcastle market, I was new, so there were some established players. So I went about it from the startup scene. We started a meetup, Newy Tech and Startups, yeah. I think it was called back then. And I know you came to a couple of our early meetings there, and I thought, hey, if I can help build a bit of a community around this. One of my mates was working at Braintree at the time, owned by PayPal.
Yep.
He had a sponsorship budget, so we got him to come along and sponsor it. So he sponsored, put on the beers, him and Forsyth, like co-did that, put on the beers, and sort of started to build a community around that. New startups as an event probably went for like a year, at least 2 or 3 years. Over the last 2 years, it's probably been extremely sporadic, if that. So I just try to help build the community. I figured if I can help build the community and I'm a part of that, adding to the community, then I'm seen as not somebody leeching on the community, but somebody that's helped bigging it up, then I'll be seen in a different way. And I genuinely felt better about that. I was like, I can feel happy about, hey, I'm providing value to the community here. If I'm doing that, I feel good about what I'm doing. I think, you know, in general, you can sort of position yourself slightly different to what most recruiters are viewed as.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like building community was a big part of the principles that you put in place for yourself. Did you have any other rules or principles that you sort of set out with and said, oh, I'm not going to cold call people, or I'm not going to do the, you know, LinkedIn messages 3 or 4 times? Like, what were those sort of rules you put in place?
Yeah, I was lucky that it wasn't KPI'd like that early. Yep. So I was lucky the environment I was in wasn't like that. So I didn't have to go out and make X amount of cold calls because I just wouldn't enjoy that as well. Like, I want to enjoy what I do for a day job. And if I've got to come in and cold call people, like, what value is that? No one wants to be cold called. If I get a cold call from somebody and they're not providing value to me, I'm like, well, get off my phone. Like, yeah. I value my time, right? So I was lucky from that perspective that I wasn't put in that situation where I had to do that. And then I think it's just, you know, my other thing I try to think about, I guess if you think about values or whatever, is just play the long game.
Yeah.
As in, like, maybe there's a fee or two I could have got earlier days if I pushed something a little bit harder, or I tried to squeeze a client, hey, you know, you owe me this or that, or try to play by the letter of the, you know, the contract or whatever. But, you know, sometimes it's better off just playing for that long-term relationship. Hey, you know, have a little bit of flexibility here and there, play for that long game. Hey, you might not get a fee right now. Also, like, you know, I think I knew a lot of people like yourself for many years before we ever did work together. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, if you provide value to people and you build long-term relationship, and it's not about, you know, can I get some money out of this person or anything like that? It's actually about just build a long-term relationship. And the time comes,
yeah,
you know, things have a funny way of turning themselves around, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think that long game a principle or approach is a really important one. I mean, it applies to everything, right? In your career and in your work. And if you're focused on that vision or where you want to get to, you won't compromise, you know, along the way. And yeah, I remember when we first met, you know, it was at one of the meetups, but then it quickly sort of turned into a potential job or a potential offer. And I did end up turning that down after, you know, a pretty intense process, as you well remember. And
I nearly cried that day.
I nearly cried a number of times that day as well. But I thought we'd never speak again, you know, after that. Yeah. And I just thought, oh, well, look, that's the way recruiters are. And you just sort of, you know, turn them down and you've made an enemy and you don't want to talk to that person anymore. But yeah, look, I think it's been a credit to you. You've obviously focused on that long game and building those relationships up. And you know, here we are. So, yeah, good stuff. And do you think the podcast has been part of, I guess, giving back to the community, building that brand up? You know, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, 100%. So, podcast, I guess it's probably my marketing background, right? I probably do attack things from a marketing background. That's what I learned for, you know, 10 odd years. And podcasts is a really good marketing medium, right? The way I have approached it, though, like, I have never sold recruitment on the podcast. It's not sponsored by, you know, there's no hey jobs post or something at the end of each podcast episode. There's no me talking about me in recruitment. Like, I try to make it very much about the guest, because the audience for me, our audience for the New Tech People podcast is the tech community. So they want to hear from other people in the tech community, find out what projects they're working on, how do they get into their position. Hey, what did Matt Finch do in his early career to get to where he's at right now? That type of scenario. So that's what I've tried to make the podcast about, the community. Me being associated with that, right? Like, I'm not Mother Teresa, right? Like, it's not a complete just me giving it back. Like, there's that, obviously, me being associated with that, me getting to meet a lot of really influential people in the Newcastle tech community helps me.
Yep.
I also find it interesting. I'm like, hey, as again, like, if I wouldn't, I'd be a really, really shit employee if I was to work for a big corporate recruitment company forced to KPI on cold calls and how many candidate CVs I can send out each day. I just wouldn't be good at that. What I do enjoy is having a conversation with people. And if I can do that on a podcast, man, happy days. I enjoy it. It provides value to the community, hopefully provides, you know, value to the community. And then it helps build my brand, obviously, off the back of that. So it all ties in.
Yeah, right. So take us right back to the beginning. Where did you get the idea for the podcast? Like, how did this come along? And I know we talked before, you sort of listened to a number of big podcasters out there. I mean, what was the influence, I guess, and the inspiration for you?
From a marketing days, I was a bit of a Gary Vee fanboy. Gary Vaynerchuk's he's a pretty influential guy in the marketing realm. One of his things, it was his recent book. It was like a redo of his original book, Crush It. It was called Crashing It. One of the examples he gives is like, if you become the person, like the local media place for your industry, you can help build a community around that. And if you're seen to be a key part of that. So I'm not, you know, I didn't come up with this idea. It's like the podcast isn't brand new. There's thousands of, well, millions of podcasts out there, right? Like, I haven't reinvented the wheel. I've just gone super niche. Yep. I've gone people, why would you do tech in Newcastle? Why would you call it New Tech People? Like, A, tech's a niche. B, Newcastle's a niche. Why would you do it so niche?
Was that intentional, that sort of focus on niche? Yeah.
I'm a massive, massive fan of depth over width. Yep. So go deep in something as opposed to going sort of short and sour across everything. So, and we've built a good solid business here now. We're up to 4 people here now in tech in Newcastle, right? Which one, a lot of people would be like, that's crazy talk. So, hey, it might have its limitations down the track, but then we'll deal with that then. But yeah, massive depth. If you know what you're talking about, right, it provides a heap more value. If a recruiter comes in and they say they're a specialist in tech, sales, marketing, accounting, and whatever else, which a lot of them do. I'm a specialist across them. I'm like, get the hell out of here, right? Yeah. And they put a Java developer for a JavaScript role, and then it gets
some C-hashes getting around.
And that gets out. Like, mate, and that happens real quick, right? You get found out, right? So I think, hey, if you got some solid knowledge in that space, you can help provide value to that industry.
Yeah, right. So you sort of touched on it a little bit, but how's the Newie Tech People brand grown, I guess, from, you know, the early days in the podcast? You've talked about the staff growing. You've got any podcast numbers, views you can share with us? Like, you've got some metrics you can throw out there.
We've got 50 episodes. I know those metrics.
That's good. That's good.
I'd probably have to hit up Janae for that one.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact numbers. So,
It's grown.
Though, it's 100% right? It's grown. Yeah. And we're looking at a couple hundred listeners for each episode, right?
Yeah.
Which I think by, you know, big international podcast standards is horrendous, right? But for our standards, I think it ticks the box, right?
Oh, it's great.
If there's 300 people in the Newcastle technology scene that want to listen to a, you know, 45-minute, 50 episode once a fortnight for what we are doing, I take that as a massive compliment. I've got gratitude for people to actually take their time out of their day to actually listen to that. I'm like, hey, if that happens, I'm super stoked to continue to invest in podcasts, continue to invest in sort of help building the community. For me, it's probably that depth over width. It's like, hey, you could do something in a broader category and maybe get more numbers, but what value does that provide? Yeah, I question it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good lead on. I mean, you live locally here in Newcastle. So I guess what's your opinion on the Newcastle tech scene? You know, you've got these listeners, you're building up the community. Like, where's the Newcastle tech scene at in your
Newcastle mind? Tech scene in 6 years. I think 6 years now I've been recruiting here. It's grown significantly, right? On a couple of folds. I think back in the days there would have been for candidates, or so for tech people in the tech community, there's probably 4 big options. It probably would have been the uni, NIB, the greater and the perm as potential, you know, technology options or technology teams in Newcastle. And that would have been the options back in the days. It's like, well, once you've done one, if you leave one, go to the other. You've only got 2 left, right?
Small world, right?
I've got a long career ahead of me and I've taken 2. Ooh.
Yeah,
that's
right.
So I think what's changed is the rise in sort of, you know, those guys are still there. The rise in that sort of that level under, and companies growing tech teams to, you know, two dozen people. So, you know, 20 person tech team is a pretty significant team, and there's a bunch of companies around there doing that. And there's a bunch of traditional Newcastle companies that are now investing in technology. Yeah. They would have been traditional. They're like, hey, we're not going to be around unless we invest in technology. And then there's a small but growing startup scene as well. When I first started here, you know, some of the startups that are now, you know, pretty solid and building solid teams were ideas or were going through incubators, the likes of Lift and Go, Campify, Switch Dim, Decky. Those guys were sort of the, some of those, a lot, or some of them went through the early Slingshot programs, but a lot of those, you know, were ideas or one-man, two-man bands back then. And most of those, or at least three of those four I just mentioned, have got teams that are 24 now, right? Yeah. And they've got, you know, multiple rounds of funding. So they're getting those grow. Pegasus just raised like 38 mil, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Acquisition too, right?
Yeah, so like they're doing phenomenally. So I think the Newcastle tech scene in general is really solid. Like there's a lot going on. There's some super intelligent people here working on some good projects. Like I think if I would have had a conversation with the likes of yourself or other people 6 years ago, there'd be a point where you'd tap out. You'd be like, I've got to go to Sydney for work. You know, I'm not going to get work on cool projects, or I'm not going to get to do X, Y, Z if I stay locally. But some of the tech being done here locally is like, it's phenomenal now. It's world-class in some stages. So I think it's more opportunity for people to do some cool stuff locally and not have to move away.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I mean, when I moved back here from the States sort of 8 years ago now, there really wasn't too much around, you know, and it's great now that we've got these startups that are sort of growing into the scale-up phase and building big teams. And then I guess it's really good to see. I mean, how do you think that they'll continue to evolve, and how do we keep them in Newcastle? I think that's a big question. Because it's easy for them to go, well, the talent's not here, or they've got to tap out and go themselves to Melbourne or Sydney. So
I think a lot of those owners are Novocastrians, are people that want to keep their businesses here. Yep. Like if they've got a choice, they're going to keep it locally. The challenge for Newcastle is the lack of talent. There's a very real reason recruiters exist in Newcastle. It's extremely hard to hire software developers in particular. Yep. The tech talent across the board is pretty thin. It's growing. I think COVID can probably help and hinder us. So help us from a perspective of, I think there's more people realizing you don't need to live in a big city anymore. There's some, you know, people that are living in Sydney to be close to work that are now able to work remotely, so they moved to Newcastle.
Yep.
That brings talent here, even if they're working for a Sydney company, and they might look at options locally. So I think it'll help us from that perspective. It might hinder us from a perspective of local Newcastle talent who want to stay in Newcastle, only have had Newcastle options in the past, but now could potentially work for a company in Sydney, Melbourne, or the US.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah, that's right.
I know there's a couple of guys, at least a few people, I think, locally that work for US-based companies and work remotely. And, you know, USD is obviously very attractive. I think that's sort of, that could be a challenge again. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how it all plays out longer term. Whilst working remote has its benefits, I think there is a flip side to that, which everyone's sort of starting to see with working remote, that people still do have a desire for that human interaction. You know, when can you meet up for your team for a coffee or a little huddle or go for a beer or something like that? There's a desire still for that human connectivity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been at home for 5 months now. It's been super quick. I mean, it feels like 12 months or more in this period. And it's been a real change working remotely. In that time, sort of my team's doubled in size as well. And so we've onboarded people remotely. We've had to work out how we do sort of team building remotely and workshops, and it's a massive change. So it's going to be interesting. And I guess, do you have any reflections of the last sort of 6 months? In you know, we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't talk about COVID and pandemic and that. So what are your sort of reflections on that? I guess from your personal recruitment and your job perspective, but also, you know, what you're seeing in the market, I guess. So.
That when it really hit, that Monday, Tuesday, like the first week where they're like, oh, I think we were put in a lockdown.
Back in March, was it?
March.
Yeah, yep.
Monday was a bad day.
Yeah, right.
I had a few offers that were at offer stage, verbal offer agreed, got pulled on the Monday. A few people that had done second round interviews were all but being job pulled.
Yeah.
That was a bad Monday. Went home, had a chat to the wife. How was the day? Well, not great.
Yeah.
Tuesday came around. I think it was worse than Monday.
Oh, no.
Bought myself a bottle of red on the way home. And I think that bottle of red lasted about 15 minutes.
Tough week, huh?
My wife asked me, how was Tuesday? And she seen what happened, and she was like, okay, I'll leave you to this. And about by Wednesday, Thursday, she was like, all right, pity party over, you know, get around to it. And basically since then, it's been all right. Like, I think there was a lot of people pulling out of jobs, not because their business fundamentals have changed. Like I don't work with, you know, retailers or cafes, right? No companies were massively hit, but there was just a hesitation of the unknown. People don't know what's going to happen. So, oh, okay, if we're working from home, how am I going to onboard somebody remotely? Or is my company going to be affected? Am I going to then have to put this person off in a couple of months? So the hesitation. So I think it was more hesitation and unknown than anything, than more business fundamental changes. So after that couple of days, I think it's all sort of settled out. Companies, some companies are more forward than others in understanding where we will onboard remotely. We will, you know, interview, onboard everything remotely. And they've had success doing that. I think a lot of companies have realized, hey, we do need to continue to operate. Yeah. And to do so, we need people in our teams. And to do that, we're going to have to onboard them remotely. So
yeah.
I think there's been a lot of companies, some have done it better than others, but in general, most of them are moving in that direction. So on the positive side, I think what it's done is fast-tracked it. It's put 5 years, five, maybe 10, I don't, at least 5 years, right? I think it would have been before remote work was just a norm. There's a lot of companies in Newcastle and elsewhere that are like, oh, you have to be in the office. If you're not in the office, you know, what are you doing? Or we can't trust you to take your laptop home because, you know, data and this type of thing. It's just like, so it's forced a bunch of companies to adapt and adapt quickly.
Yeah.
So I think there's a real positive there for everyone to say, hey, we've had to adapt with the times, and the pandemic's forced that upon us. It wouldn't happen otherwise, right?
Well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. There's been a lot of change, and you see the memes getting around, you know, what drove your digital transformation, COVID-19, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a good thing. I think in the long run, it'd be a real positive that we'll look back and go, yeah, we did make that big step change. But well, I'm glad you come through it. Anyway, that's a positive. And,
yeah, and Newcastle's been really positive. Like, we've got a bunch of companies hiring right now. It's a really good spot at the moment. So I think there's a little bit of nervousness again.
Yeah.
Because right now, Newcastle seems to be on the brink there.
Yeah.
But yeah, hey, I think a lot of companies nearly across the board would be better prepared this time around.
Yeah, cool. And do you think there are any other challenges we face here in Newcastle that you want to touch on?
Yeah, I think lack of talent. Not lack, just shortage.
So how do we fix that?
Really good talent. I think there's a couple of things, but probably both push and pull. Like, so I think the university is really good for Newcastle. I think the university does churn out some really good talent. So I'm trying to keep them here. Yeah. Back in the days, again, I think there wasn't opportunities for people coming out of university to stay local. Mm. They would have had to go to Sydney. That's not the case anymore. So they can stay local. So over time, the more people coming out of university and staying locally, we'll build our talent base up. I think COVID will help us because I think more people are realizing you don't need to live in a big city anymore. Mm. Rents are cheaper in Newcastle than they are in Sydney, right? You can live near a beach, have a better life. So moving here, once again, that'll add talent to the area. And then from the other side is just those companies continuing to progress, continuing to use new technologies to provide opportunities that people want to do, right? Like, you want to be attracted to your job, like, and to have, you know, get a good feeling about what you're doing, what your company's doing. So if those companies continue to grow, we got some cool projects on locally, people will want to stay here. So yeah, I think that's probably twofold there.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, you touch on university, it's a good segue into education. It's always my favorite topic and favorite question for your guests, and people can go back and listen to my answer, but you tell us, why do you think, or what are your thoughts, I guess, on the importance of a university degree, both, I guess, in the future for tech professionals, but really just more broadly?
Yeah, I think I've changed. If we went back and cut out my comments in this question every time, I think I've changed it so many times. I did a university degree. I didn't turn up very often. I pretty much, those 10 marks that for a lot of the courses where you get one mark for every time you turn up, I pretty much gave myself, I'm trying to get out of 90. I'm never going to get 100 because I might go to a couple. I did a lot of the stuff online. But I think that was some really good foundations. The more I think about it now, the more I think, you know, I did macro and microeconomics and things like that, things that I would have not have thought about, like change management, that I wouldn't think provided me any value. But I think in these days, you're like, oh, where did I actually learn that? It's probably back there. It's probably back at uni. So I think everyone has different experiences there. I probably didn't turn up enough. It was probably just the age I was and the space I was at in life, where maybe partying was a little bit more important to me at that stage. But my university as a whole, I think it's not for everyone, but I think it's really important. Yeah, I think the best answer, or the most common answer that I've agreed with, is that it provides a really solid base level of which to grow. That learning how to learn is a big one. I'm a massive fan of learning in general. Continual learning, I think university provides that. It's probably also a bit of a you get out of it what you put in. So I probably didn't have as great an experience because I didn't put in enough. But I think the future, I think it will continue to be a part of the education system, just not in its current format.
Yeah.
I think the 3-year degree or the 4-year degree where you come in and you do the degree as laid out will continue to change, and it might change over time where you can add in some external providers as well to sort of to build up that sort of that education portfolio. Alex Mendez, I had on the podcast only recently, he provided a really good understanding of how they build a university degree with the first 2 years often not changing with just all the core subjects.
Yeah.
And then the third year, you know, you add in your new stuff.
Yeah.
I think it'll continue to change like that. So I think it'll always be a part of, always maybe a bit strong, I think it'll for the near enough future will be a part of an education. I just don't think it's the be all and end all. I think there's a lot of other external providers where you can add in different parts, and I think that might be the future.
Yeah, I just listened to your podcast with Alex, and I thought that was a really great way of describing sort of, you know, the phases, and that those sort of core fundamentals are in the early years, and then later in the degree or the later years, you're sort of focusing on the skills that you need to come out with and be active and have in the market.
Honestly, for me, that was so eye-opening.
Oh, yeah, and the light bulb went off for me too, yeah.
And I had massive respect to Alex, and even more respect for the University of Newcastle and just university in general. After hearing that, I was like, okay. So they do think about staying relevant, that type of thing. I just think there will be a continual change with the university degree won't be as it is now in the future.
And what about that postgraduate style learning? Have you done any of that yourself or looked into that?
I signed up for a master's. I lasted 2 subjects.
Yeah.
And then I think it was probably at the time I fell pregnant.
Okay.
Pregnant for baby 2 maybe. And it's just not for me. It's just not my learning. Even for those 2 subjects, I found myself up at midnight the night before, you know, the assignment's due, and I'm cracking it out from like 6 p.m. till 12 p.m. to just get it done, and I was submitting at 11:58 just because it was due by 12. And that's if that's what you're doing, that's probably not, you know, it's probably not the way to be doing it. I wasn't immersed in it, I don't think I'll do one.
Yeah, I still go back and forth on it myself. I mean, I've sort of moved more into, I guess, management roles now, and you know, you still hear, oh, you need an MBA or you need to get an MBA, and yeah, it's definitely hard to fit in, I guess, with what you're doing. But I have a lot of friends and known a lot of people that have been quite successful getting that postgraduate degree, even without, you know, the undergrad, and then just based on sort of work experience and that. So yeah, I think there's a lot of options.
I think there's a lot of value. I've heard a lot of people that have done an MBA or done other versions of masters and things like that have had a lot of success with that, and they've enjoyed it and got a lot out of it. So once again, it's probably horses for courses. It's, you know, some people get a lot out of it, other people. I heard somebody refer to it as a divorce course because it's so intense, and then, you know, you're having so much immersiveness into that degree, and then you're also trying to, you know, you've got a young family as well, right?
Like
trying to juggle that, a full-time job and an MBA, it's pretty hectic.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So I guess from your perspective, you get to see a lot of really interesting jobs on the market. You probably got an insight into salaries, the type of work people are doing, you know, really having that sort of broad range of things. I mean, where do you think if people are looking to go and get a degree, or maybe you're in that later stages or even early in their tech career, based on what you're seeing and the salaries and the type of work people are doing and the other perks and that, what should people be focused on if they're sort of at that stage and listening right now?
Just doing something they enjoy. I think just doing something you enjoy. If you do something you're enjoying, you're probably going to do pretty well at it. I've seen some people that are doing something for the sake of it's paying well, and, you know, they do the job, but they'll probably stagnate at some point. Whereas the people that I really see succeed are the people that love what they do, right? Like Liam had a chat to Sean Bailey. He's actually joined NIB only recently on his podcast. And, mate, he got his job essentially because I think, well, one of the key factors in what he did was he built a bunch of side projects like in his own time. Like a guy like that, young fella, he's come out, he stands above the pack because he loves what he's doing, right? Mm. Like there's other people who are building side projects or building something in their own time because they just love tech, right? Like I placed a dude the other week, you know, like as a tech support role, and the guy's built like 16 PCs for his mates and his family and things like that. He just loves technology. He's got his own little lab set up at home. I think if somebody really loves what they do, they'll succeed. If I had to just say broadly, hey, where they're going to continue to be jobs for the next 5 years, software development, right? Software developers in Newcastle are in demand. There's plenty of opportunity for them. And I think you could get a software development in job. Like, I think I could get a software development role in Newcastle within 12 months right now with me having zero experience. Like, if I went and did some free online training and built some stuff on the side, I think I could get myself at least an entry-level role in that, just by being self-taught, showing some initiative, building some stuff in my own time. There's plenty of free online learning out there. There's nothing stopping you from learning, right? I think there's plenty of opportunity there. Just people just show a little bit of initiative. So I think in general, hey, figure out what you want to do. Yeah. And even if you don't know what it is, what you want to do, right? Like, you're doing some stuff in machine learning and things these days, which wasn't around, you know, 10 years ago, but you just, you know, as you're going through your career, you get your eyes on something, you pick up a little bit more about that, and then you run with it, right? Opportunities like that, you know, will present themselves if you are opening those doors or sort of opening the doors for yourself, really.
Yeah, I think your point earlier about having that passion for learning, and if there is something you're interested in, there's so much free content out there right now, whether it's podcasts or blog posts or short courses or whatever it is. You know, you want to know about machine learning, you can go and learn that now in your own home for free.
Yeah,
you
know, from some of the best people in the world.
Well, that's right. Stanford, universities and everywhere else. Yeah, it's quite amazing. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about you. I guess you're a busy guy. You do a lot of running around. Do you have any sort of productivity tools that you use to sort of manage your day-to-day or keep you moving?
I think I've downloaded and bought nearly every productivity tool or app there is. What I've actually been doing pretty well for probably the last 6 months now, I've been trying to do Inbox Zero working with that, just because my emails were out of control before that. I was nearly a just select all archive and start from scratch.
Yep. Any particular app or tool or anything using
for that? No, I just did a little bit. I just using Gmail, but I just, there's some online. I just found something online that showed how to set up your inbox with, you know, the different starring and things like that, and then how to operate with that. So I've been using that and just the Gmail tasks, like the out of the Google suite, the tasks feature. So I didn't use that because I used to pop it all in my calendar. And my calendar was an absolute mess. It was a basket case. If you looked at it, you'd be like, what's going on here? So tasks and Inbox Zero are probably my two things I'm trying to run with at the moment. I use Evernote. I've used that for years. I think it's got good search functionality. But yeah, that's probably it at the moment. I've tried, you know, plenty of other habit tracking apps and things like that. And I'll still chime into one or two of those from time to time when I'm trying to, you know, get better on my exercise or my diet or my reading, or even tried meditation at one stage. Just different things to try to, you know, get it, form habits. Yeah, it's not always easy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And are you using anything to sort of help manage sort of the workload and the stress levels and anything like that? Any tools or techniques?
I think that's probably where I've dropped the ball over the past 6 months. I think running a small business has its challenges. Running a small business through COVID had challenges, growing business challenges. Trying to build processes in place that, you know, I've gone from essentially myself recruiting to now three people recruiting. You know, a lot of the things were up in my head, right? So building out the processes for that and things like that, it's just challenging and just takes time. So I don't think I've probably managed that overly well. I think my going to the gym dropped off, my alcohol intake through COVID probably increased, my lack of quality food probably increased. I probably haven't managed that perfectly definitely not perfectly, but not even well over the past like 3 or 4 months in particular.
Yeah.
But I try and get back on that bandwagon. I think just life in general, you can't always be running 100% at everything, right? I don't probably do balance overly well. When I'm all in on something, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And when I'm not. So I find when I get back in the gym, I'll eat better and everything sort of, you know, falls into place there. If I'm not going to the gym, then I tend to eat more takeaway and all the rest of it. So I just try and get back in the swing. Swings and roundabouts.
And what about collaboration tools? Your team's growing, as you mentioned. I assume most of you are sort of spending time remote as well and living in different parts. Like, are you using anything around collaboration there that you could recommend?
We use all the basics, right? We use the G Suite. So we use the G Suite across the board. We use Zoom. We use Slack. We use we got a recruitment specific CRM tool that we use, and we're trying to make more and more use out of. That's probably been one of the bigger changes over the last couple of weeks, is just like really trying to nail that, get that working for us, because like most CRM tools, which everyone would have this understanding that there's capability for days with those things. And we probably use 10% of it, right?
Yeah.
So trying to use a little bit more, it's not the tool's fault. It's the fact that we don't use it properly, right?
Yep.
So trying to make that work for us is something we're focused on lately. Yeah, that'll just continue to work. I think, yeah, from a team's perspective, just, yeah, email, G Suite. The fact that the G Suite, you can host everything online, like it's so easy. Like,
yeah.
You can start a business in 10 minutes these days with buying a domain and setting up a G Suite, right?
Yeah, that's right. So apart from this one, of course, what are you listening to? What sort of podcasts have you got on play right now, or books, or what are you sort of reading or listening to?
I got one of those Audible subscriptions, and get a book a month type thing, and I try to read a little bit as well. I think probably favorite books. I revisited The Obstacle Is the Way by Ryan Holiday just recently. I think it's super relevant for the times and the challenging times we're going through. Like, that's probably one of my favorite books. Joshua Waiskin's got a book called The Art of Learning, which is super. Probably one of my favorites again.
Okay.
I've just revisited that for the second time. There's another one. Ray Dalio's got a book called Principles.
Yeah, great one. Yeah, good
so
one.
So I've got that now in ebook form, hard copy form, and on Audible. I think that's super relevant for me at the moment in setting up. Essentially, it's about, you know, setting up the key principles of which you can build a business or build your life, and then everything else sort of sits on top of that.
Yeah.
If you get those key principles right, like everything else sort of manages itself. So it was super relevant for me. It just spoke to me. So that was super interesting. From a podcast perspective, I just change it up all the time. I like to try to listen to podcasts to help myself get better as an interviewer. I think I listen back now. I have a chat to Janaya, who edits all the podcasts. So she listens to my voice more than everyone. And she's like, hey, the differences between episode 1 and episode 50 is like night and day in, you know, how I communicate. Always trying to sort of improve that. So I can listen to different people, Tim Ferriss, Lewis Howes, James Altucher, Brendan Schwab, Joe Rogan. I think I just change it up all the time. There's a dude at the moment who I've listened to about 5 of his podcasts on the different podcast episodes he's been on. His name's Jesse Itzler. He's like an entrepreneur guy out of the US, but he's got like 4 kids. He's married to Sarah Blakely, who's the founder of Spanx. So like super power couple in the entrepreneurial world. But for me, I'm like, hey, he's a super entrepreneurial guy running businesses and managing his family really well. He runs ultra marathons as well, which I have zero interest in.
Yeah.
But he seems to manage fitness and the life, the work and the life and all that well, which is important to me. It's something I'm really, really focused on. It's just trying to be, you know, a good family man as well as running a business.
Yeah, yeah. How are you following these people? Like, are these the types of people putting out the best information you think that you want to follow?
Yeah. The other dude's probably Naval Ravikant.
Ravikant, yeah.
Yeah. Like he's got one really, really popular tweet storm, and it's just phenomenal.
Every time it comes up, I retweet it.
I agree. I agree. I do the same. And I download, he's got like a podcast, short podcast version of it now as well. Like that guy, like for just business and life, I think he's bang on. And every time I read it, I'm like, oh, I should read that like on a daily basis.
Yeah.
There's so much relevance there.
Yeah. Oh, I've always wanted to say this, but we'll put it in the show notes. So we'll have it there for you. So I guess we're getting towards the end. I mean, what do you think you've learned so far? A pretty varied journey. I mean, what sort of advice or what sort of learnings would you pass on to your younger self if they could have a listen to this?
Yeah, younger version of myself, I would have probably said listen more.
Okay.
I think I was definitely not the best employee through my times, both in marketing and recruitment. I think I probably thought I knew more than I did. I probably spoke more than I listened. And I always got told, oh, you know, you should listen more. And I was like, I know what I'm talking about here. Like, people have got to hear what I've got to say. And these days, I realized that I didn't know what I was talking about, and I probably should have shut my mouth and just listened a little bit more. So I probably would have told myself to that, and probably just that, and probably gratitude. Gratitude is probably something I've really bought into probably the last 5 years. Is just like, just be thankful for what I've got. Like, you don't always need to be at the next stage. You don't always need the next job, the next big thing, the next pay rise, the next whatever it is. Just if you live a little bit more presently and just be happy for what you got, like, life seems to be okay, right?
Yeah, good stuff. No, spot on. Well, thanks for your time. I'm really glad we did this. Episode 50, we made it this far, and I'm looking forward to the big party at episode 100, maybe a live audience or something like that.
If we make episode 100, we'll do a live audience and I'll put on the food and beverages.
Big party, 2 years post-pandemic, hopefully. And
if we're allowed.
Yeah, that's
or
right.
Or might well be sitting there in masks.
That's right. So where can people find you if they want to follow you and hear more from you?
Yeah, mate, probably most of it's on LinkedIn, right? LinkedIn's probably not everyone's favorite place, actually. I know especially a lot of people in technology don't like LinkedIn at the moment because of recruiters. But I put out a lot of my content on there. We cut up like smaller parts of our episodes and put it on there. But we've got, obviously the podcast is on, it's on Apple and Spotify. We've got a video version on YouTube. We do a lot of our like little edits on there as well. So yeah. And then it'll all be, we've got a brand new tech people website going up soon, but everything's all on our website as well. So newtechpeople.com.au.
All right. Thanks very much, James.
Thanks, man. Listening to this episode of New Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.newtechpeople.com.au. Thank you.